this taking so long? I told you, we've...
She shook her head as she looked at the brown stains down the front of Gertie's nightdress.
You turned your back on her, didn't you?
Ellen bit down on her bottom lip and nodded.
I wanted to give her some privacy.
Sister sighed.
There's a reason we don't have doors on the cubicles, you know. You can't take your eyes off these nutters for a second.
Ellen blinked away the unwelcome tears.
I'm sorry, I won't do it again.
Sister smiled.
Looks like you've learned this lesson the hard way, so we'll say no more about it.
Thank you, Sister, and again, I'm really sorry.
You'll laugh about it one day, believe me.
Sister clapped her hands.
But not today. Come on, chop chop.
By 8 o'clock, the patients were all seated at the long dining table, identically dressed in their shapeless brown dresses. A tower of blackened toast was placed in the middle, and immediately hands grabbed from all directions, scattering it across the table.
One at a time!
Yelled Sister, collecting up the toast and restacking it. She turned to Ellen.
Student Nurse Crosby, would you mind handing round the plate? Honestly, it gets more like a chimp's tea party in here every day.
Ellen passed the toast around the table as another staff nurse filled up the cups with weak tea. Sister doled out some rather unappetizing greyish scrambled eggs, and calm descended as the patients tucked into their breakfast. They didn't interact with each other. There was no small talk, no conversation, just the sound of them noisily chewing the rubbery toast and slurping the tea, most of which ended up in the saucers. Ellen circled the table, her hands behind her back, nodding and smiling in turn at the patients. Some of them returned the smile, others just grimaced and looked away. She noticed that Gertie had finished and was now rocking back and forth in her chair, drumming her fingers together.
"Gertie, would you like the last piece of toast?"
Before she had even finished speaking, the old woman sitting next to Gertie reached for the toast herself. Gertie picked up a fork and brought it down like a dagger on the back of the other woman's hand. She screamed in agony as blood spurted from the wound and splattered the tablecloth. Sister was on the scene in seconds.
"For crying out loud, Gertie! You don't make this easy for yourself, do you?"
Ellen stood anchored to the spot, rigid with horror, her mouth agape in a silent scream.
"Student Nurse Crosby!"
Sister snapped.
"See to Rita, will you? I'll deal with this one."
She placed her hands under Gertie's armpits and hauled her to her feet. Gertie kicked her legs as though she was riding an invisible bicycle, but she was no match for the formidable bulk of Sister Winstanley. The other patients began mumbling to themselves, or maybe to each other. It was impossible to say, as Rita's screams drowned them all out. She clutched her injured hand to her chest and turned her fury on her assailant.
"You mad cow! You want locking up, you do!"
There was no trace of irony.
Sister Winstanley intervened. "Thank you, Rita. I'll handle this now," she barked at Ellen. "Count the cutlery back in, will you? There should be 32 forks and 33 knives, including the one stuck in the margarine."
Then she called for the staff nurse on duty, and together they dragged Gertie the length of the corridor, her feet barely touching the floor. Throughout the entire episode, the old woman had not uttered a single sound. Chapter 4. By the time she dragged her aching body up the stairs to her first-floor bedroom in the nurse's home, Ellen was fit to drop. Although the rest of the shift had passed without incident, she had been deeply traumatized by what she had witnessed with Gertie and couldn't bear to think about the old woman languishing in the padded cell for the rest of the night. Sister had assured her that she would be checked on periodically and given something to eat. They weren't monsters, she'd said. Ellen wasn't sure if she was referring to the staff or to the patients. In the dim light of the hall, she fumbled in her bag for her room key, desperate to kick her shoes off and collapse onto her bed. Unable to locate the key, she tipped her bag upside down and picked through the contents on the hall floor. "Hey, what you doing down there? Need any help?" She stared at the feet standing beside her pile of clutter, highly polished brogues, with the laces tied in a double knot. She let her gaze travel upwards and cocked her head as she scrutinised his face. He looked vaguely familiar. She might have seen him before in the student's bar, if memory served, but never here in the nurse's home, and certainly not on the girls' corridor. She struggled to her feet, her face flushed and tears not far away. "I can't find my key. I know it's in here somewhere." His knees cracked as he crouched down and began to sift through her things. It only took a few seconds before he straightened up again, triumphantly holding the key.
"Is this what you were looking for?"
Ellen exhaled with relief. "Oh, thank you. It's been such a long day. I can barely seem to function."
"I know the feeling. First day on the wards, was it?"
Ellen felt her bottom lip beginning to quiver, and not trusting her voice, she merely nodded. He extended his hand.
"Douglas Lyons, second-year student."
She reached out and shook his hand.
"Ellen Crosby, first-year student. Obviously."
She gave a small laugh. He had an open, friendly face with a broad smile, and his blonde hair was tousled as though he had run his fingers through it.
"I can't place your accent. Where are you from, Douglas?"
"Please, call me Dougie,"
he invited, before continuing.
"My family's in Manchester now, but I was born in New York. My mother's from England, but she met my dad in the States and we lived there until I was 19. Mom was really homesick at first, and they hadn't intended to stay that long, but then came the war in Europe, and they decided it would be safer to stay put. We came back 6 years ago, when my grandma fell ill."
Ellen stared up into his glacier blue eyes. She hadn't expected him to answer with his life story, and was conscious they were still holding hands.
"Well, I'm very pleased to meet you, Dougie, and thanks again."
She bent down and began to gather up the detritus from her handbag. Dougie crouched next to her, their heads only inches apart. She could smell his cologne, fresh and dewy, like a pine forest after a downpour.
"Here, let me."
He scooped up the contents and handed the bag back to her.
"Well, I'd better get off this floor before the night matron puts in an appearance."
He lifted Ellen's hand and brought it to his mouth, delicately skimming her skin with his lips. It was a shockingly bold move, she thought, but that was Americans for you. Not that she'd ever met one in the flesh before. Then, with a half bow, he turned and bounded down the stairs, leaving his aftershave lingering in the stale air of the hallway. She sniffed the back of her hand. Carbolic soap. Considering the day she'd had, it could have smelt a lot worse. She had not thought it possible to sleep so soundly. She'd been expecting a fitful night's rest filled with nightmares about marauding mental patients threatening to stab her, so she was somewhat startled when the bell of her alarm clock roused her from her sleep. The mustard candlewick bedspread lay in a crumpled heap on the floor. She stared at her uniform hanging on the back of the door, her stout black shoes neatly placed under the wicker chair. She heaved herself out of bed and ran a sink of hot water. Whatever the day held in store, it could not be any worse than yesterday. Back on the ward, she was relieved to see Gertie lying in her bed, her eyes wide open, staring at the ceiling, apparently none the worse for her ordeal in the padded cell, although it was difficult to know with any certainty. Sister Winstanley was being briefed by the night staff as Ellen entered the office and hung up her cape.
"Gertie's back on the ward."
"Yes, sister, I noticed."
"You'll need to keep an eye on Rita. She won't exactly be welcoming her with open arms, and we don't want a riot on our hands."
Sister laughed as she took in Ellen's worried expression.
"Welcome to another day in paradise.
Can you make a start on the teeth?"
Of the 32 patients on F10, 18 of them wore false teeth. The night staff had cleaned the teeth and left them soaking overnight in individually marked glasses. Ellen collected the tray and began to make her way round the beds. It was a ghastly sight. 18 glasses of false teeth, with their pale pink gums bobbing around in sterile cleaning fluid. She felt like an extra in some low-budget horror movie. She approached Gertie's bed first,
and gently touched her on the shoulder.
Time to get up, Gertie. I brought your teeth.
The old woman stirred and Ellen helped her into a sitting position.
How are you this morning?
No answer, of course. Close up, Ellen could see that Gertie's eyes were bloodshot and puffy, with mauve semicircles underneath. She looked as though she had been punched. Ellen pushed the thought from her mind. It was too horrific to contemplate. This was a hospital, a caring environment, not a maximum security prison. She sat the tray on the end of Gertie's bed and inspected the labels. She found Gertie's glass and placed it on the cupboard beside the bed. She couldn't be sure if what happened next was deliberate or some sort of reflex action, but either way, Gertie's leg shot out from under the sheet and sent the tray crashing to the floor. Although it seemed to happen in slow motion, Ellen was not quick enough to grab it, and now 17 sets of false teeth lay on the floor, their mocking rictus grins contrasting with the polished wood. She stared silently at the hideous mess, wondering how she was going to get it all cleaned up before Sister found out. She was too late. As seemed to be the case whenever anything went wrong, Sister Winstanley materialised by her side in a second. "What in God's name has happened here?" Ellen glanced at Gertie, who stared impassively ahead.
"It was my fault, Sister. I don't know, it just slipped."
She could feel the heat of embarrassment rushing to her face.
"Find an orderly to help clean this glass up, and then rinse the teeth under the tap."
"Won't they need sterilising again?"
"You think we've got time for that? Just rinse them off and hand them out."
But I don't know which teeth belong to which patient."
"Then you'll just have to try them out for size. But don't take all day about it. If they end up with the wrong teeth, it's not the end of the world. Half of them won't even notice."
Ellen recoiled in disgust. The thought of having to wear someone else's teeth was enough to make her gag. She turned to Gertie, now sitting up in bed, cradling an empty glass. She ran her tongue over her lips, giving them a moist sheen before smiling at Ellen, revealing a perfect row of sparkling clean dentures. Chapter 5. Almost 2 months had slipped by since the last time she'd been home, but as Ellen surveyed the street where she had grown up, she was satisfied to see that nothing had changed. The gas lamp still brightened the greasy cobbles, and scabby-kneed kids still sat on the curb, hunched over in little groups, sharing their childish gossip. She knew she should have warned her mother she was coming to visit, but it had been a spontaneous decision, and with no telephone there was no way of letting her know she was on her way. After her tumultuous start to life on the wards, she now had the luxury of a couple of days off, and the urge to return home to the sanctuary of her family was too strong to resist, even though she knew it would send her mother into a flap. As she pushed open the front door, the smell of her mother's steak and kidney pie wafted through from the kitchen. Even though it would be more kidney than steak, it was enough to get her juices flowing.
"Mom," she called out, "it's me. Surprise!"
Mrs. Crosby was sitting on an upturned fruit box by the fire, darning needle in hand and her cheeks aglow with the heat of the flames. She struggled to her feet as she greeted her only daughter.
"Ellen, love, why didn't you say you were coming home? I would have made so much special. Oh, God, I hope there's enough to go around. Never mind, eh? Bobby can have a couple of butties instead. I've got some blotter paste in larder. I'm sure he won't mind giving up his slice of pie for his big sister, and he'll still be able to drink cabbage water, won't he?"
Ellen smiled at how well she knew her mother. She was in a flap, all right. She hardly drew breath. They embraced, Ellen revelling in the comforting, familiar smell of her mother's skin. Mrs. Crosby used the same brick of bright green household soap for scrubbing her husband's grubby shirt collars as she did to cleanse her own face. Maybe the slathering of cold cream she applied every night was enough to counteract the drying effect of the soap, because she was certainly glowing with a radiant complexion, the envy of some women 10 years younger.
"It was a spur-of-the-moment thing, really,"
Ellen answered as she sank down into the only chair in the room, her father's chair. Mrs. Crosby cast a nervous glance towards the door.
"It's all right, I'll get up when he gets in." Well, you know how tired he is when he gets home from work, and I like him to get settled before he has his tea, you know, close his eyes for a while.
Ellen shook her head. Was there ever a man who was looked after so well as my father?
Mrs. Crosby was on the defensive. She wiped her hands down her housecoat.
Well, he works so hard for this family. It's back-breaking work, you know, delivering coal, and he never stops all day. He even eats his butties on the go.
Mom, I'm only teasing you.
Ellen craned her neck to look through to the kitchen.
Where is our Bobby anyway? It's getting dark.
Playing outside still. I'm surprised you didn't see him. Perhaps he's gone down to the wreck for a kickabout. He'll be home when he's hungry, I expect.
Ellen adored her little brother. And the feeling was mutual. He was only 8 years old, and the age difference could easily have been a barrier, but a special bond existed between them. He had been devastated when he'd learned that Ellen was going away, and had literally had to be peeled off her as she said her goodbyes.
"I've missed him. How is he doing?"
Mrs. Crosby perched on the fruit box.
"Up to his usual mischief,"
she sighed. She moved the fire guard away and picked up the poker. As she prodded at the fire, a flash of orange sparks rose up from the coals.
"I popped round to Hilda's last week to borrow a couple of spuds, and you know how she likes to gas. Anyway, by the time I got back, the little bugger was in the kitchen, leaning on table, gawping into my mixing bowl."
Ellen frowned.
"Had you been making a cake, then? Was he eating the mixture?"
Mrs. Crosby snorted.
"I wish. No, there was a bloody goldfish in there."
"A goldfish? Where the heck did that come from?"
"Oh, the rag and bone man came, and our Bobby rushed out to pet his horse as usual. Well, while he's out there, he spots a bucket of goldfish, doesn't he? The old guy says he can have one if he has anything for him. Bobby scurries back inside and comes out with my best coat, which I'd hung on the banister."
Mrs. Crosby folded her arms across her chest and shook her head.
"The worst of it is, I haven't even finished paying for it yet."
In other circumstances, this might have been a faintly amusing story, but Ellen knew very well how scarce money was in this household, and new clothes were a rarity. That coat would have been meant to last her mother for years.
"Can't you get it back off him? Explain the mistake."
"Too late. By the time I caught up with him, he'd already sold it."
Ellen grabbed her handbag.
"Here, let me give you some..."
Mrs. Crosby stood up.
"You're a good girl, Ellen, but we don't need your money. You keep it. You've earned it. We'll manage."
She changed the subject.
"Tell me about you. What's it like at hospital?"
"It's challenging, but I'm getting used to it. I've been on a long-stay ward so far, but I'm moving to an acute admissions ward on Monday, which should be better."
She stretched her arms above her head and yawned, the fire making her sleepy.
"There are some sad cases in that place, Mum. One old dear has been there for 40 years, and she never speaks to anyone. Not one word, ever."
"Goodness me, she's a proper nutter, then."
"Well, that's not a medical diagnosis, Mum. But yes, she must have problems. I'm going to look up her admission records when I get a chance, and see why she's there. Everybody seems to have forgotten."
A gust of wind blew in a swirl of crusty leaves as the door was flung open. Ellen's young brother was in such a rush to get in, he tripped over the threshold. He picked himself up and inspected his knees, then, satisfied that there was no damage, asked his mother.
"What's for tea, ma'am? I'm starving."
Mrs. Crosby laughed.
"You're always starving. Tell me something I don't already know."
She ruffled his hair, then stood back and folded her arms as she regarded him.
"What?"
asked Bobby. She didn't reply, merely smiled and tilted her head over towards her father's chair. He followed her gaze.
"Ellen! He came back!"
he shrieked.
He rushed over and scrambled onto her knee.
"I'm just visiting because I missed you so much."
She pulled him closer and kissed his forehead. He nuzzled into her chest.
"I had a goldfish, but it died."
Ellen glanced at her mother.
"Oh, yes. I didn't mention that, did I? The bloody thing only lasted a day."
Chapter 6. Reporting for duty on the acute ward felt like her first day at school all over again. There were so many new faces and names to learn.
After a couple of days off, though, and with renewed vigour, Ellen felt ready to embrace the next challenge. Whilst everybody seemed to have given up on the patients in the long-stay wards, including the patients themselves, here there appeared to be a more proactive attitude to nursing. On the long-stay wards, it seemed more about containment than cure, somewhere to wait whilst eking out the last scraps of life. On this ward, though, the patients were given all the latest treatments and medication, and some were expected to make a recovery. The doctor even put in an appearance. Some things were the same, of course. Beds too close together, no doors on the toilet cubicles, baths placed side by side without a partition in between. Maybe the stench of decay was not quite so overpowering, but there was still a detectable smell of ammonia beneath the Dettol and mansion polish.
Morning, student nurse Crosby.
It seemed a mouthful, but Ellen had learned she would not be known simply as Nurse Crosby until she had qualified.
Morning, sister... Atkins,
the woman supplied as she checked the label on a medicine bottle and placed it back in the cupboard. She was as tall and thin as Sister Winstanley was short and round, with her greying hair pulled into a tight bun.
Welcome to the ward. Shall we start with a brew?
She nodded towards the battered teapot in the corner. Sister Atkins had a long face with sharp cheekbones, bereft of makeup except for a slick of red lipstick, which seemed at odds with the rest of her plain appearance.
Yes, please.
Ellen could hear her mother's voice.
Never say no to a cup of tea and never pass up the chance to use the toilet,
was her sage advice.
We've got a new one coming in today, so I'd like you to take care of the admissions process.
Me, but...
Don't worry, it's quite simple.
Sister Atkins took a sip of tea, leaving a greasy red stain on the rim of the cup.
Been on long stay, have you?
Ellen nodded.
Yes, it was eventful.
The other woman smiled.
So I heard.
Ellen's face coloured. The incidents with the toilet and the teeth had spread like measles round the social club and the nurse's home, and she could not walk down a corridor without someone giving her a knowing smile or a nudge. Sister Atkins patted the back of Ellen's hand.
Don't worry about it. Moments of light relief are scarce around here. Anything remotely funny is seized upon, retold and no doubt exaggerated.
She turned to the pile of notes on her desk.
The new admission is due to arrive around 10, so I'd like you to go and prepare a bed, the one between Pearl and Queenie. Then go to the stalls and put together a new clothes bundle, nightdress, day dress, knickers and stockings. Try and find a dress that's not been boiled to death if you can.
All the communal clothes were washed at scaldingly high temperatures to ensure that every vestige of vomit, sputum and other obnoxious bodily fluids was removed. Inevitably, it meant that the clothes shrank and were extremely drab and ill-fitting, itchy too, if the way the patients clawed at their own skin was anything to go by. Ellen returned with a stack of starched white sheets and began to make up the bed, beginning with the rubber sheet which she pulled tightly over the mattress. She had no idea if the new admission was incontinent or not. It was just standard procedure. She glanced over at Queenie, who was lying on her own bed, fully dressed, but with what appeared to be a hand-knitted cape draped over her shoulders and tied at the neck with a satin bow. Queenie was watching her carefully through narrowed eyes, her rust-coloured hair a frizzy ball of tight curls, and her green eyeshadow looking as though it had been applied by a particularly heavy-handed toddler.
"Morning, I'm Nurse Crosby. Student Nurse Crosby."
Queenie swung her legs over the side of the bed.
"Am I getting a new neighbour, then?"
"Yes, she's due in shortly. I hope you'll make her feel welcome."
"Depends on whether she's a right lunatic or not."
Ellen slotted the pillow into its case and bashed it into shape.
"I don't know what the matter with her is, but I'm sure you'll get along if you try hard enough."
Queenie changed the subject.
"When can I go home?"
"Well, that's up to the doctor, isn't it?"
Ellen sat down next to her on the edge of the bed.
"How long have you been here?"
Queenie shrugged.
"Dunno. What year is it?"
"It's 1956, November."
Queenie counted on her fingers.
"Well, I've been here since my father died in 1952.
In the February, it was. You probably heard it on the wireless and saw it in the papers. He'd not been well, but we didn't know it was that serious. She sighed and shook her head. I wish she'd just stayed there and never come back. Ellen was struggling to keep up.
You wish who had just stayed where?
My sister, Elizabeth. Queenie stared blankly ahead, tears not far away.
If she'd just stayed in Kenya, I wouldn't be here now.
Chapter 7. She wasn't sure what to pack, or indeed how long she would be away. How many sets of underwear would she need? How many books should she take? The suitcase lay open on the bed, its brown checked lining now faded. She wandered over to her dressing table and picked up her mother's hairbrush, running her hand over the soft bristles. She'd spent many hours brushing her mother's auburn locks until they shone so brightly Amy imagined she could see her own reflection staring back at her. She took the brush and dragged it through her own hair, the static causing it to crackle and stick out. She knew she would never be as beautiful as her mother had been, but that didn't mean she shouldn't make an effort, especially today of all days. The set had been a wedding gift from her father, and she knew her mother had treasured it. Her eye caught the gold carriage clock on the mantelpiece. She wandered over and picked up the watercolour that was propped up behind it, once again marvelling at the delicate brushstrokes that had been coaxed into producing such an evocative painting. The shades of gold, russet, ochre and sage combined to convey such a vivid depiction of the landscape that it made Amy gasp each time she looked at it, for even now she always discovered something new. At the sound of her father's voice bellowing up the stairs, she hurriedly plopped the painting on top of the clothes and other bits and pieces in the case. Then she closed the lid and fastened the catches.
Amy, are you ready?
She stood at the top of the stairs, the suitcase hanging by her side. Is it time already? I thought we could have a spot of lunch before... Peter Sullivan stared at his daughter, a flash of irritation passing across his face.
Amy, please, don't make this any more difficult than it needs to be.
His voice was weary, each word cloaked with regret. She grunted as she laid the suitcase on its side and pushed it down the stairs. It shot down like a sledge, causing her father to leap out of the way as it reached the bottom. She descended the stairs and picked up the case. It was worth one more try. She wouldn't make things easy for him.
Is this really necessary?
Noticing his glance towards the kitchen door, she followed his gaze to where Carrie stood, her hands clutching at the doorframe. As they both stared at her, she folded her arms across her chest, obviously in no mood to argue.
It's the only way, Amy, unless, of course, you want me to press charges.
Her gentle delivery seemed at odds with her defiant stance.
There'll be no need for that, dear.
Peter spoke with a firm tone, but as he went to kiss her goodbye, he tenderly tucked her blonde curls behind her ears and stroked her cheek. Then he took hold of her shoulders and kissed her forehead, leaving his lips there for a few seconds. Unable to witness the intimacy between them, Amy pulled open the front door and strode off down the path. She had never been the best traveller, and as they pulled up outside the entrance to Ambergate, she felt decidedly sick. She swallowed the saliva that flooded her mouth and tried to think of biting into a lemon, imagining that bitter taste on your tongue was supposed to quell the nausea. It didn't work. Her father had driven too fast down the bumpy driveway, the Morris Minor suspension no match for the potholes, and now he was already on her side of the car, wrenching the door open for her. It was as though he couldn't wait to be rid of her. He offered her his hand, which she brushed away, alighting from the vehicle under her own steam with as much dignity as she could muster. The car's flatulent exhaust had choked out some obnoxious fumes, and she covered her mouth with her sleeve.
"You look a bit peaky," he announced, taking the suitcase from her. "Now you feeling all right?"
She glared at him, ignoring his ridiculous question. Of course she wasn't feeling all right. How could he be so insensitive? Once inside the hospital, the feeling of nausea only intensified.
The clinical smell barely masked something else she was not able to identify with any certainty, but guessed to be rancid cooking fat. Over the clattering of china, she could hear someone moaning, the sound starting off low and then rising to a crescendo. Her thoughts drifted back to her days on the farm, and the time the big old bull was suffering from an impacted bowel. He hadn't protested as much as whoever was making that dreadful racket. Honestly, was there really any need for all this? She turned to her father.
Perhaps there's another way. I mean...
Although he spoke softly and with compassion, his words left her in no doubt that he couldn't be swayed.
It's for your own good, Amy, and that's the last I'll say about it.
But...
Amy, please. I love you, I'll always love you, but you need help.
He squeezed her arm, digging his nails in, a level of physical aggression he had never shown before, and his cold, dry eyes confirmed there was no point in arguing any further. A jangling of keys heralded the unlocking of the door to the ward, and a young nurse beckoned them in.
"I'm Student Nurse Crosby," she announced. "I'll be dealing with your admission. Please come this way."
Amy stared at the long ward looming in front of her, metal-framed beds barely wider than a coffin, windows obscured by thick bars. The suffocating atmosphere of desperation and lost hope made it difficult to breathe, and she had a sudden urge to charge out of the building and gulp in a lungful of fresh air, enough to last her for however long she was going to be forced to stay in this place. She could feel the panic beginning to rise. It started with the tingling in her toes, then rose slowly, steadily, like mercury in a thermometer, and she knew it wouldn't stop until it had reached boiling point. She scribbled round to address her father once more, appeal to his soft side, the one he'd had before she had calcified him. It wasn't fair. She hadn't done anything wrong. Why would no one listen to her?
"Where's my father?"
she demanded of the young nurse. The nurse stared at her own feet, the hesitation in her reply exposing her discomfort.
He's already left.
"What? No! There's been a terrible mistake! I shouldn't be here, please! You've got to believe me, it's all her fault!"
She wrenched her suitcase from the clutches of the nurse and belted towards the door, skidding on the highly polished parquet and sending a trolley full of medicines crashing to the floor. Her breathing came in short gasps and she grabbed the handle and twisted it. Her moist palms could not get the required purchase, and as she pushed and pulled, the door rattled in its frame but remained stubbornly shut. A firm hand grasped her shoulder, and she cried out in shock and pain.
"Get your hands off me!"
She wriggled free and dug her fingernails into the space between the door and the frame, trying to prise them apart. She started yelling then.
"Help! Help! I can't breathe! Let me out! I need to go home!"
She dropped to her knees and shouted through the gap at the bottom of the door.
"You can't do this, Father! Come back, please!"
The edges of her vision were blurred. The creeping blackness smothered her, and she knew she was going to swoon. She stopped screaming for a moment. What had made her think of such an old-fashioned word? Victorian ladies used to swoon after an attack of the vapours. She wondered if they had any smelling salts here, and was just about to ask when she felt a sharp prick in her upper arm, followed by a dull ache and a thud as her head hit the hard floor. Chapter 8.
"When she comes round, I want you to take down all her details. Height, weight, hair colour, a full description."
Ellen frowned.
Why do we need that? We know what she looks like."
Sister Atkins didn't bother to hide her impatience.
"Don't they teach you anything in that so-called training school? It makes it easier to track them down if they go AWOL. You'll also need to check her for lice on her head and down below, and give her a bath, and her hair's too long. Use the scissors in my desk drawer. But before you do all that, label her suitcase and take it to storage, attic room 12.
Ellen was exhausted just listening to the instructions. The walk to the storage room was more of an expedition than a quick errand, giving Ellen time to reflect on the new admission. Amy Sullivan was only a young girl. She couldn't have been any older than Ellen herself, and yet their circumstances were poles apart. Working on the long-stay ward had been bad enough, but those patients had reached the end of their lives and, let's face it, were simply waiting to die. Amy's life was just beginning, and yet here she was incarcerated against her will, a young girl with her whole future ahead of her. Ellen glanced down at the directions Sister Atkins had given her. First door on the right after the refractory ward, then second left after the kitchens, then all the way to the end of the corridor. Door is on the left at the end, a blue one. Ellen had already been walking for 20 minutes, the suitcase now weighing heavily in her hand. She wondered if she would find her way back by following the directions in reverse. Perhaps she should have left a trail of breadcrumbs. Finally, she found the blue door, yanked it open, and climbed the steep staircase to another door at the top, much smaller than the first one, meaning she had to bend down to enter the attic room. She fumbled around for the light switch. The dim, unshaded bulb hanging from the middle of the room provided barely enough light, but as her eyes adjusted to the gloom, she saw the suitcases stacked on top of each other, various shapes and sizes, all containing remnants of a life left behind. She couldn't stand up to her full height, and her hunched-over position made it awkward, but she managed to wedge Amy's case on top of a stack of others. The cobwebs hung heavy with dust, and there was a lingering smell of mothballs. But after the chaos of the ward, it was peaceful up here, and Ellen had the urge to sit a while and gather her thoughts. She looked at the labels on the cases and wondered what had become of their owners. She remembered Gertie then, 40-odd years stuck in this place, her life simply erased. Perhaps she had a suitcase here somewhere that would reveal more than Gertie herself was prepared to. After dressing down from Sister Atkins for taking so long with the suitcases, Ellen sat on the end of Amy's bed, pen in hand, poised to take down the admission details of her new patient. The young girl was propped up on her pillow, arms folded tightly across her chest, a defiant look on her face. "Where are my things?" she demanded. Ellen tried to reassure her.
"I've taken your suitcase to storage. Don't worry, it'll be safe there."
Amy picked at the shapeless gown covering her slender frame.
"I'm not wearing this. I want my own clothes."
"Sorry, all patients have to wear the hospital issue clothes. Now, can you tell me your full name?"
"Yes, of course. I'm not bloody stupid. Amy Amelia Sullivan. When can I speak to the person in charge?"
Ellen glanced towards the nurse's station. Sister Atkins was busy attempting to get a rather difficult patient to finish her breakfast. Every time Sister raised the spoon of grey porridge to the woman's lips, she clamped her mouth shut. Sister Atkins whipped her hand across the patient's face, the sharp slap echoing off the bare walls. Then she pinched her nose between her fingers until her reluctant charge was forced to open her mouth. Sister shoveled in the porridge and wedged her hand under the patient's chin. Ellen turned back to Amy.
"Look, a word of advice. Please don't make any trouble for yourself. You saw what happened when you created a scene before. You want to spend your time here drugged up. Or worse."
Amy fell silent and covered her face with her hands.
"My chest, it feels so tight, like a boa constrictor. It's about to make me his lunch."
Ellen peeled Amy's hands away and held them in her own.
"Just breathe deeply for me, all right? I know it's a bit strange for you, but the sooner that you accept that you're here, the sooner we can concentrate on making you better and getting you home again."
She gave Amy's hands a reassuring squeeze.
"That's a good girl. Look, I'm new here too."
Amy began to speak, but Ellen cut her off.
"Oh, I know our circumstances are different, but let's find our feet together, shall we?"
Amy nodded.
"I'm not mental, you know."
"I'm not saying you are.
Now, what's your date of birth?"
"Is that a trick question to see if I'm a certified lunatic or not?"
"Lord above."
"No, it's the standard admissions process." Amy sighed. 25th of January, 1937. Ellen hesitated before she wrote it down. She and Amy had been born only a week apart.
"Now, can you stand up whilst I measure your height?"
"I'm 5'3".
"Well, if you don't mind, I need to check."
Amy threw off the thin cotton sheet and stood by the side of the bed as she allowed Ellen to measure her.
Ellen filled in the card.
Yes, 5'3". Right, hair colour.
Amy climbed back onto the bed. Butterscotch? My mother always said my hair was the colour of butterscotch.
Ellen scanned the admissions card. I don't have a box for that. I'll just have to put light brown. Eye colour?
Chocolate. Ellen smiled.
Let me guess. Your mother always said your eyes were the colour of chocolate.
Are you making fun of me?
Gosh, no, I'm sorry. I'll just tick brown then. Now, I need to check you over for,
She cleared her throat.
Lice.
What? I've not got lice? Where the hell do you think I've come from?
The girl had the face of a cartoon fawn, her big eyes framed with long sweeping lashes, but the sudden flash of anger had hardened her pretty features.
Get me the person in charge now, she demanded.
I'm afraid it won't make any difference. She's the one who gave me the instructions. As though sensing some drama, Queenie shuffled over and flopped down on her bed next to Amy's.
I hope we don't have a troublemaker in our midst. Who asked you? Snapped Amy. Just keep your beak out.
You need to learn some manners, young lady. Don't you know who you're talking to?
Ellen intervened. Now, now, ladies, let's all calm down, shall we? Queenie, would you mind giving us some privacy?
Ooh, Queenie sing-songed.
Hark, you nurse only been here 5 minutes and already throwing your weight around. I might have to bring you down a peg or two. How about a stretch in the tower, eh? See how you like that.
Amy raised a finger to her own temple and made a circular motion.
Completely cuckoo, I assume?
Delusional, Ellen confirmed. It was time to stamp her authority.
Come on, we'll go to the bathroom, get you into a nice hot bath, and I'll check you over for... well, you know.
Two high-sided Victorian baths stood next to each other on the tiled floor. Ellen turned on the huge taps, the water gushing out in a torrent. She added a capful of Dettol and swirled it around with her hands, then turned to Amy.
Could you remove your dress, please?
Amy hoisted the garment over her head and tossed it on the floor, leaving her naked from the waist up.
Thank you. And your knickers. You want a good gawp, do you? Do you fancy girls, then?
Ellen refused to be riled, although she wasn't sure how to handle this sudden truculence.
No, I don't. I'm just doing my job.
Amy pulled down the baggy knickers and stepped out of them. She bent down, hooked them onto the end of her forefinger, and held them aloft.
Where do you want them?
Over there with the dress. Now, completely naked, Amy stood with her hands on her hips and thrust her shoulders back.
Come on, then!
Unnerved by the confrontational stance, Ellen forced herself to take a step forward.
Could you just stand with your feet apart, please?
She picked up a small comb, then bent down and gently parted the girl's pubic hair. She would not be rushed, would not let this girl think she was uncomfortable with the task in hand, even though she would rather have stuck pins under her own fingernails. As she worked the comb through, trying to calm her trembling fingers, she sensed Amy's legs stiffen and her stomach muscles tense.
Hold on, you can climb into the bath now.
She supported the girl at the elbow as Amy lifted her leg over the high-sided bath and pretended not to notice the solitary tear that slid down the side of her nose. Kneeling down and picking up a small pan, she scooped up bath water and poured it over Amy's head. She lathered up the carbolic soap and massaged the suds into her hair.
What the hell are you doing?
Washing your hair.
With soap? Are you mad? I'll never get the comb through it.
There's no shampoo here, I'm afraid. She rinsed off the soap, Amy's hair hanging in long tendrils down her back. Stripped of its natural oils, it was now squeaky clean.
I need to cut it. It's too long. Over my dead body? You're not coming anywhere near me with a sharp implement.
Ellen ignored the protest as she gathered Amy's hair into a ponytail.
It would be a shame to cut it off, but she knew that if she did not obey Sister's instructions, not only would she be in yet more trouble, but Sister Atkins herself would then hack it all off with far less style and finesse. She gripped the bundle of hair in one hand, while surreptitiously reaching down with the other for the scissors. Then, as efficiently as the blunt instrument would allow, she snipped off the length of Amy's hair. Back in Sister's office, Ellen left the completed admission card in the wire basket on the desk, ready to be added to Amy's records later.
"What a flaming performance that was!"
Sister Atkins appeared, tossed the empty breakfast bowl onto the food trolley, and rubbed her hands together.
"That'll teach the little bitch to try and bite me!"
Ellen peered round the door and saw that the patient who had been subjected to the force-feeding was now lying on her bed, her arms stretched wide above her head, her wrists strapped to the metal frame with bandages, her gagged mouth only capable of uttering the most guttural of sounds. She flailed her legs, causing her dress to ride up and expose the baggy knickers all the patients had to wear. Ellen began to protest, but the shock had rendered her speechless.
I don't...
Sister Atkins stood with arms akimbo and skewered her with a stare.
"You don't what, Student Nurse Crosby?"
"Well, I mean, that's not very... Well, they didn't teach us any of that in school."
"Now look here, I'm in charge of this ward, not your bloody tutors. They haven't been near a patient in years."
Sister waved her arm in a sweeping arc.
"You've got to show these lunatics who's boss, or before you know it, they'll be taking over and we'll all be doomed."
"But look at Amy," Ellen protested. "She's only a young girl. She shouldn't see that. She'll be terrified." Sister Atkins snorted.
"If early indications are anything to go by, that girl's more than capable of handling herself. A feisty one she is, and no mistake."
She softened her tone a little and placed a conciliatory hand on Ellen's shoulder.
"I was just like you once, believe it or not.
Oh, yes, when I first started here, I thought I could change the world too. You think things are bad now, but back in the 30s, it was far worse. On one of my first shifts, me and another student nurse were sent to the refractory ward, where the most dangerous patients were kept locked away in side rooms. We were told to stick together, but my colleague had other ideas. She thought we could get the round done quicker if we split up, and before I could protest, off she went. I was terrified. I don't mind admitting. We only had to collect the chamber pots, but these were the most disturbed patients in the whole hospital. I've never worked so fast in my entire life. And by the time I reached the end of the ward, my colleague was nowhere to be seen. I thought, bloody charming, that is. She's left me and gone back to the main ward." She dropped her voice a little. "But she hadn't. A massive search was undertaken, but it wasn't until that afternoon that they found her under one of the patient's mattresses." Ellen was transfixed.
"Oh, that's awful."
"An understatement if ever there was one." Sister's brittle tone was back.
"So if I tell you a patient has tried to bite me, forgive me if I seem to be a little harsh in response."
Ellen bent her head and stared at the floor. "Yes, sister, I'm sorry." Apologising was all she seemed to do these days.
"Was she all right? Your friend, I mean."
"She most certainly was not all right." Sister Atkins left a suitably dramatic pause.
"She'd been strangled."
Chapter 9. The social club heaved with bodies, a fog of cigarette smoke hanging above their heads, the sound of raucous laughter, a reminder that they were all human beings with a life outside the asylum. This was the place where staff came to unwind at the end of a long shift, a place to let go of pent-up frustrations, in the company of other people who knew exactly how you felt. Students who had never touched a drop before suddenly found themselves ordering pints with whiskey chasers, doubles at that. Ellen pushed her way through the throng and shouted her order to the bar steward.
"Two fingers, please, Jack!"
He sloshed the whiskey into a glass and slid it across the bar. She downed it in one, the sharp taste making her eyes water as she spluttered.
"Same again, please!"
She thumped her chest. Jack smiled.
"Not bad, is it?"
She grimaced as she took the second drink, made her way to a nearby table, and pulled up a low stool.
It really wasn't the place to come if you wanted peace and quiet, but she just needed a few moments to let the drink work its magic. She thought about her mother, the woman who battled all life's hardships without turning to hard liquor. In fact, she only drank once a year, a small glass of sweet sherry on Christmas Day, taken 1 minute after midday and not a moment before. Thinking of home brought on an unexpected rush of sadness. Ellen let her head loll back against the wall and closed her eyes, the glass resting in her lap. "This one taken?" She opened her eyes as Dougie pulled up another stool.
"Now, please join me and let me get you another when you've polished that one off. It's the least I can do after you helped me the other week. Where have you been, anyway?"
"Back in school, unfortunately." He took a long swig of his pint. "I've sure missed this place, though."
"Have you really?"
He laughed. "You'll get used to it. The classroom's a pretty dull place after the excitement of the wards."
That's one word for it, I suppose."
She gulped down the rest of her drink, trying not to imagine her mother's disapproving stare. "Let me get these, and you can tell me all about it." Dougie rose from his stool, took a glass, and elbowed his way to the bar. He was taller than most of the other students, and had no problem in shouting his order over their heads. He returned with the drinks, his face flushed and a fine emulsion of sweat on his top lip. He lifted his chunky cable-knit sweater over his head and blew a cooling plume of air over his own face. The shirt underneath rolled up, giving Ellen a glimpse of his well-defined torso, with a line of golden hair travelling down from his belly button to... Oh, dear God. Her face on fire, she pushed the thought from her mind and looked the other way. "Well, that sure is better," he declared, tossing the heavy jumper onto a vacant stool. "Now, how's it been? Come on, don't spare any details."
"I'm surprised you haven't heard already. Everybody else seems to have done."
He shook his head. "I've kept a low profile, been revising, you see."
"Why? What's happened?"
He edged closer and folded his arms on the table between them.
"Come on, honey. You can tell your Uncle Douglas."
She hung her head and picked at the beer mat, eventually lifting her eyes to meet his inquisitive gaze.
"I'm beginning to wonder if this job is right for me. I seem to be a laughingstock around here."
"I'm sure it's nothing personal. Student nurses are fair game, I'm afraid."
He leaned in closer and lowered his voice.
"When I was a first-year student, my charge nurse sent me over to the female side of the hospital to collect some supplies from a matron. I was terrified of that woman, I don't mind admitting. She ruled the place with an iron fist and never bothered with a velvet glove. Her voice only had two levels, bellowing if she was in a good mood and thundering if she considered you to be a half-wit."
Ellen took a sip of her drink. "I'm sure you could never be considered a half-wit, Dougie."
"Oh, no?" I looked down at what the charge nurse had written and asked Matron for a box of fallopian tubes.
Ellen snorted on her drink and covered her mouth with the back of her hand. It was a few seconds before she could speak.
"Oh, Dougie, you didn't!"
He leaned back in his chair, holding his palms up.
"As I said, fair game as students."
Sister Winstanley from the long stay ward lumbered towards them, a pint in each hand, froth cascading down the sides. Broken veins mottled her cheeks.
"Evening,"
she nodded.
"Sorry, I've forgotten your first name."
"It's Ellen."
"Right, listen. Old Gertie's been moved to the sick ward. I thought you'd like to know, as you seem to take an interest in her."
What's the matter with her?"
Sister Winstanley shrugged.
"I don't know what the diagnosis is, but she'd started bringing up blood, and the doctor says there's fluid on her lungs. She can't breathe right either."
"Has she said anything?"
"Don't be daft. Of course she hasn't. Not one word for donkey's years. What makes you think she's going to start talking now? I've never heard her voice yet."
"I'll pop in and see her when I get the chance."
Sister Winstanley laughed.
"You're a proper soft one, you are. But you'll be wasting your time."
She caught the eye of a colleague over in the corner and bustled off, leaving Ellen and Dougie alone again.
"What was all that about?" he asked.
"Oh, there's a patient on long stay who hasn't spoken a word for years."
"Good Lord, how incredible."
Apparently she did speak to begin with, but nobody seems to remember her doing so.
How long has she been here?
40-odd years, they tell me. Dougie traced his lips with his forefinger, his brow furrowed.
Why don't you look up her admission records?
I've checked the filing cabinet in Sister's office, but there's no file there for her. She's been here that long, it's as though she's part of the furniture, instead of a human being with feelings.
Dougie drained his pint and set his glass down.
Come on, sup up, as they say around these parts.
Ellen rose from the stool and gathered her bag.
Why, where are we going?
Once outside in the frigid air, Ellen wrapped her arms around herself, her breath billowing around her face. She blew out hard as though trying to extinguish candles on a birthday cake.
When I was a kid, I used to pretend I was smoking when the air was this cold.
She placed her forefinger and middle finger to her lips and sucked on her imaginary cigarette before breathing out again. It used to make me feel so grown up to see all the smoke.
Dougie ferreted in his back pocket and pulled out a packet of Capstan.
Do you want one for real?
Ellen wafted away the packet. Oh, blimey, no. It seemed very exotic when I was a kid, but the reality is somewhat different. It just made my eyes water and my throat sore.
You obviously weren't doing it right. Do you mind if I do?
Not at all. Go ahead.
She watched as he struck a match and cupped his hands around it, the yellow glow lighting up his face for a second. The phosphorus smell hung in the air.
Are you warm enough?
He asked. Without waiting for an answer, he slung his jumper-clad arm around her shoulder and pulled her closer.
Come on, let's pick up the pace a bit.
By the time they arrived at the hospital, they were both breathing heavily from the exertion of the brisk walk. Ellen's lungs ached from the onslaught of icy air.
Oh, my chest hurts, she gasped.
You'll feel better once we get inside. Come on.
She surveyed the villa in front of her. It stood to the right of the main building and was almost as impressive as the hospital itself, but on a much smaller scale. The leaded windows set into stone frames and the elaborate cornice on the clock tower hinted at a degree of craftsmanship usually reserved for only the most eminent of palaces.
This is the administration block. It's where most of the patients' records are kept, along with staff records, past and present, Dougie explained.
Ellen squinted at the clock. Will there be anybody here at this time?
There is always someone here, Ellen. Follow me, and I'll introduce you to Fred.
He propelled her towards the wooden front door and pulled back the thick iron knocker. After three loud raps, they could hear the sound of keys jangling on the other side, and the door was eased open a crack.
Evening, Fred.
The door creaked open a little further, and a tiny man with wispy white hair peered over his spectacles.
Who goes there? It's me, Dougie. How have you been, Fred?
The old man gave a chortle and beckoned them inside.
Douglas, my friend, come in. You all right? Aye, that we are.
Douglas mimicked, his American accent temporarily quashed.
This is student nurse Crosby. She needs some help.
He turned to Ellen.
This here is Fred. Used to be a patient here many moons ago, and now can't bring himself to leave us, can you, Fred?
The old man took a playful swipe at Dougie.
A cheeky yank you are. Now come in and we'll have a snifter.
Fred's office was uncomfortably hot. It stank of paraffin and was lit by a heavily shaded angle-poised lamp. His newspaper was spread out on the desk, a half-empty bottle of whiskey on the table beside it. He poured out two more glasses and refilled his own, then held it aloft.
Nice to see you again, Douglas. It's been too long. Now, what can I do for you?
Ellen spoke up.
I'm looking for the admission records of Gertrude Lewis. She's been here for 40-odd years, and that's about all I know, I'm afraid.
Fred narrowed his eyes.
That name sounds familiar. Perhaps our paths crossed whilst I was in here proper-like.
He scribbled something down on the edge of his newspaper, then shoved the end of the pencil into his mouth.
40-something years? So we're looking at an admission year of, let's see, 1916 would be 40 years, but you think it's more than that?
Yes, I believe so, said Ellen. I'm sorry I don't know the exact year. Do you think you can help us still?
It's what I'm here for, isn't it?
He heaved down a monstrous leather-bound ledger, its pages yellowed with age. He ran his finger down a column, flicked over the page, and repeated the process.
Yes, here we are. That's the one.
He made another note in the margin of his newspaper, then opened a mahogany cabinet on the wall. Row upon row of keys dangled from brass hooks. He selected one and tossed it over to Dougie.
Room 10 upstairs, first on your left. The records have been archived.
The room was packed with wooden shelves, only the narrowest of aisles in between, and there was a grittiness beneath their feet, the result of year upon year of collected dust, the musty smell reminiscent of second-hand bookshops.
Phew, where do we start?
Asked Ellen, as she surveyed the endless boxes packed together.
I can't actually believe Gertie's records have been archived. She's still a patient, for goodness sake. She's not dead yet.
It looks worse than it is. It's all alphabetical.
Dougie pointed to the first row of shelves.
That's A to C, so we can forget that one.
He marched ahead down the next aisle.
This one's D to F. We're getting closer.
Ellen skipped an aisle and ventured down the next one.
Here we are,
she called.
I'm in J to L.
Dougie appeared by her side, and together they traced their fingers along the boxes, carefully scrutinizing the names.